Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say thank you once again for taking time out of your busy life to join me this morning on my program. Today is Monday, January 18th, 2020. Has this year not already been as crazy as last year with all of the developments in my country? And just what's happening in 2 days, a new president will be inaugurated. All of us were looking forward to 4 more years of Trump, but it has been just an incredible roller coaster ride of events. And that's the subject, I think, of another program. This morning, I'm going to take us back in time to the 1979 Iranian Revolution, which, believe it or not, was 42 years ago. It was on February 1st, 1979, that incredible picture that was seen around the world and was broadcast on live Iranian television when the Ayatollah Khomeini stepped down off the steps of a jumbo 747 from Paris. He had just returned to Iran following the exile of the Shah and his family. It was the beginning of the end of human rights and freedom for all of my Iranian friends. We are just maybe a couple of weeks away from looking back to the events of that day. I want to read to you this morning from my book, Chasing After Rainbows, Stories of the Revolution. This is a very unique book. I wrote this about 6.5 years ago, and it's based on a true story. One of my Iranian-Canadian human rights activist friends, her name was Shadi Paveh, told me the story of her father. When she was living back in Iran during the revolution, her father was a general in the Shah's army. And at one point in time, when things got so bad, right before, I think it was that the Shah left, the general took his family and went into hiding. And they remained there for as long as they could, but at some point in time, the general was rearrested and was executed. One of the first things the Ayatollah did when he became the dictator, if you will, of the Iranian people, was that he put to death all of those sympathetic to the Pahlavi dynasty, especially the soldiers. This story is part fiction, part historical. It is the story of Sahar and Shabnam, two young Iranian girls growing up in their young years during the tumultuous times of the beginning of the revolution. And they're trying to make sense of their world. They're trying to understand what has happened to their Iran. And so in this book, part of it goes back to 1979. But in the beginning, it's the present day when I wrote it, 2014. Hassan Rouhani had just become the new president of Iran. And this is Sahar, living in California. She is a lawyer. The story opens up with her celebrating a victory. And then she finds out through a television broadcast that the Iranian government is putting to death a group of young Christians. And she is absolutely shocked to find out that one of those girls, one of those young ladies, if you will, that is being put to death, that's on death row, is her long-lost friend, Shabnam. Well, now she has got to come up with some kind of a scheme to get her best long-lost friend off of death row. So in a nutshell, there's much more, but in a nutshell, that is the story of my book, Chasing After Rainbows, Stories of the Revolution. This morning, what I want to do is to maybe whet your appetite to read this book. And I'm going to be reading certain selections from it. But it is a unique story. It's one of the most unique books I've ever written. I love writing historical fiction. And this is a combination. It's historical, and yet it's fiction. The characters, of course, are contrived from my own imagination. The events are somewhat from my own imagination. So I think you would enjoy this book, but I want to read to you this morning from this book and take you back. It's been 42 years since the Ayatollah Khomeini stepped off the jumbo jet from Paris and was greeted by millions of Iranians as the leader of a new Islamic state. A new age had finally dawned in Iran. The secular government in Iran had now become the glorious government of Allah. After months of rioting and protesting, which finally resulting in the ousting of the Shah, Iranians were now convinced that their country would be transformed into a new republic of true justice and freedom. That's what they were promised. However, now almost 42 years later, under the rule of mullahs, Islamic clerics, and an aging supreme leader, Iran is anything but a republic of true justice and freedom. Instead, it has become a culture of death that imprisons and executes anyone who would dare to speak out and disagree. Be our voice of freedom. Please help us. We are prisoners here. Those are the exact words of my dear Iranian friend who lives in Shiraz. And she said that to me during a video chat. I asked her what I should tell my customers at my upcoming book signing, and here's what she said, pleading with me to tell them to be our voice for freedom. I have another Iranian friend who lives in Mashhad who shared with me a frightening experience that she recently had at a university where she works part-time as an English teacher. One day, she was summoned into the office of the discipline committee and interrogated. They asked her if you become a Christian? My friend denied the accusation, and then they promptly demanded her to hand over her laptop computer. Well, finally, my dear friend in Tehran described to me in an email what daily life was like for an Iranian woman under the Islamic Republic. Every day, she explains, the Ghasti Irshad, that is the morality police, patrols the streets searching for violators of the dress code. If a woman does not wear her hijab properly, if she is showing too much skin or wearing too much makeup, she can be fined and arrested. What has changed in these last 42 years? Where is the promise of a glorious new Iran with true justice and freedom? Since the new president, Hassan Rouhani, took office back in 2013, executions have tripled. Political prisoners are being silently executed by being denied medical intervention. Journalists, bloggers, and lawyers fill the cells of Evin Prison, Qarchak Prison. Christians are being tortured and held hostage, refusing to change their religion and return to Islam. Where is the promised religious freedom. Where is freedom of speech and assembly? It is nowhere to be found in the Islamic Republic of Iran. My dear friend Shabnam, who grew up as a young teenager in Tehran, was shocked to discover that speaking her mind could have grave consequences. Quote, I did not think that a simple conversation, having an opinion and simply expressing it, would put my life in danger. In 1981, for 18 grueling months, Shabnam suffered in Evin prison. She recalls the frightening experience of counting 60 to 70 gunshots at night and realizing that executions were taking place. My other dear friend Shadi, who I mentioned, remembers the painful experience of saying goodbye to her father at the airport in Tehran. Shadi's father, who was a general under the Shah, was later arrested and executed by Khomeini. My Iranian friends have suffered so much under the Islamic regime. It is a culture of death, fear, oppression, which has claimed the lives of so many desperate Iranians. I am writing this book, or I have written this book, to sound the alarm for an Iran awakening. For those of us like me who lead normal, peaceful lives, we need an awakening, a wake-up call to speak out and pray for our suffering brothers and sisters. They need our voices to speak out against injustices and to stand up for their human rights. My dear friends, Shabnam and Shadi have dedicated their lives to the cause of freedom and human rights. They remember where they came from. They know firsthand what life is like without freedom. I truly believe that one day there will be a free Iran. I look forward to the day when my Iranian friends can walk down the streets of Iran without fear. I believe that after the storm, after all of the pain and the suffering, that they will see the rainbow. The rainbow will arc across the sky in brilliant colors, and the beauty of Iran will finally return to its people. I know that God hears the cries of his people. I know that he will soon paint the skies of Iran with the beautiful rainbow. Thus, the title of my book, Chasing After Rainbows, Stories of the Revolution. I want to take us back when ABC News covered the major events that led to the Iranian Revolution. It's a very short soundbite, but encapsulates everything I've been talking about. Let's listen.
The president and the Shah met for about an hour this morning. The president said the Shah's visit was encouraging and had strengthened the strong ties of friendship between the two countries.
Despite the temporary imposition of martial law, the Shah's new government appears determined to press ahead with liberal reform. It is from the mosques that opposition to the Shah is being led by puritanical Shiite Muslims. The religious zealots want to return to the Constitution of 1906, which would ensure all legislation conforms with Islamic law.
Almost 40,000 refinery workers went on strike today, virtually cutting off Iran's petroleum exports.
University students demonstrating in Tehran, shouting death to the Shah, pledge allegiance to the Islamic movement of the Ayatollahs.
The number killed in Tehran since the beginning of the month is probably well over 100, but people in this crowd were saying and believing 7,000 had been killed. Emotions over the dead and the rumors of dead are high. Every day here now, the demonstrations and arrests go on. Rumors in Tehran say people are being armed and may soon start firing back at the troops.
News there would be some kind of announcement about a new government came after yet another day of running confrontations in the center of Tehran. The army kept moving today, trying to head off the demonstrations, keep them where possible from growing in size. This dogged military resistance to the anti-Shah disturbances, part of an effort to buy the Shah as much time as possible in which to create a political solution. Demonstrations like these today in Tehran are a daily occurrence in towns throughout the country now, and one sign of the fact there is nothing less than a kind of revolution being attempted here, trying to change the form of Iran's government, and unlikely to settle easily for any solution which still keeps the Shah on his throne.
Daily, it has become more difficult to look at the scope of opposition to the Shah of Iran and still see his monarchy surviving. The Ayatollahs are committed to the ouster of the Shah and nothing less than that. They chant, Makbar Shah, death to the Shah.
The new prime minister has gone some liberal political distance beyond the Shah, but not likely far enough to suit the anti-Shah religious establishment or members of the political opposition.
The Shah and his empress left shortly before midday. The empire he had hoped to build had been shattered by a year of violence.
The news spread with the speed of the human shout. Shah Ferrari Shodeh, the people cried. The Shah has escaped. The old chant of death to the Shah was replaced today by a new one, death to Carter. There is still a strong sentiment against American interests in Iran and the widespread belief that the United States has taken the profits from Iranian oil. Khomeini, Khomeini, they cried. We're waiting for you. The Ayatollah is expected to return to Iran, but when or how is not yet known.
That is a brief capsule glimpse of the events that actually led up to the expulsion of the Shah from Iran, and that was one of the saddest days in Iranian history, because he subdued to cancer about a year later in Egypt and died. What happened is just incredible, and I'm going to share with us right now in my book, Chasing After Rainbows, Stories of the Revolution. I want to set this up. Shabnam, of course, is a major character, which will encounter Sahar later as they're growing up adults. But this is back in 1978 when the demonstrations are starting to intensify. And the scene is Sahar has just entered into the dining room. They're getting ready to eat dinner. And she's looking at the events all around her, and she's trying to make sense of them. And it's mealtime in her home, and she is going to ask her father, what is causing all of this? And this is from page 46 of Chasing After Rainbows. It was a quiet and intimate meal in the family dining room with just Shapur and Puran. Roya gently laid down a hot, steaming plate of gourmet sabzis in front of Sahar. Sahar leaned over and inhaled the delicious aroma of the Persian stew steaming from the plate. Thank you, dear Roya. You fixed my favorite tonight. Sahar unfolded her napkin on her lap and proceeded with her fork to dig into her favorite dish with delight. Mmm, Sahar groaned with satisfaction. The spicy taste of herbs, green onions, turnip greens, and lamb melted in her mouth. She carefully chewed each bite, savoring the exotic taste on the tip of her tongue. Sahar paused, dabbing her mouth off with a napkin, and took a quick sip of green tea. Shapur glanced over at Puran. We will leave for the Caspian Sea next week, honey. I'm very fortunate that my vacation was not canceled due to the uprisings of protests and violence going on in Tehran and Shiraz. Puran took a sip of tea and shook her head. Dear Shapur, what will the Shah do? Things are getting so much worse now, Puran said with a concerned tone in her voice. Shapur relaxed back in his chair and dabbed his lips with his napkin. Confident that our troops and the militia can handle these angry protesters, Shapur replied confidently. They need to stop listening to the ridiculous propaganda from Khomeini and his followers. Their philosophical ideas are very harmful to our country. These religious Muslim zealots want to turn Iran into an Islamic state. Roya reached over and poured some vodka into an empty glass for Shapur. He took a quick gulp and then laid his glass back down on the table. Their complaints against the Shah are ridiculous. Under an Islamic state, there would be no freedom. Father, Sahar interrupted, why are people so angry with the Shah? What has he done wrong? Shapur took a deep breath and gazed intently at his daughter. The Muslim clergy believe that the Shah's ties with the United States are corrupting our culture. They see Western values as poisoning the religion of Islam and feel that the Shah has abandoned his Muslim faith. Shapur paused and took a little drink of vodka. He lifted up his glass with a sarcastic smile. Islam prohibits the use of alcohol and pork. He put down his glass and looked back at Sahar. Do you remember New Year's Eve when President Jimmy Carter was a guest of the Shah here in Iran? Yes, Father, Sahar quickly snapped back. Remember at midnight, the president and the Shah toasted each other with a drink in their hands? Well, the Muslim clergy were outraged. Millions of people via the television saw the Shah, the monarch of their nation, a Muslim country, raising a glass of alcohol in a toast to an American president. But Shapur, Puran interrupted, America has been so helpful to our country with military and financial investments. Shapur took another drink of vodka and relaxed back in his chair, folding his hands together. Yes, they have, but the times have changed. Muslims don't like the direction Iran is going. They feel we have become too secular, and they are fighting for a fundamentalist Islamic state. Shapur shook his head in disgust. Politics mixed with religion. These two powerful entities don't mix well together. They create a recipe for disaster. So in this scene where Shapur is explaining to Sahar the reasons for why the country has been turning against the Shah, what I'm doing here is informing the readers some of the big events. But now there is one major event that many historians, many of my Iranian friends will say this is the event which really started the Iran Revolution. And we're going to take you to another scene in the book where Sahar is talking to her father. She has just come back that day from the turmoil going on in the city, and she was mixed in with a crowd protesting, and she's telling her father about it. And this late at night when she's getting ready to go to bed, I will take you to that scene. I'm so glad that you are safe now, dear daughter, Shapur said with a grateful tone in his voice. Sahar tightly hugged her father with tears streaming down her face. We were so afraid, father, so scared. I know, Shapur replied, holding Sahar tightly in his arms. Then he let go and gazed intently into her eyes. Sahar noticed a look of concern in her father's eyes. She knew that there was something terribly wrong. Peder, that is Farsi for father, what's wrong? Shapur bowed his head in despair. He was quiet for a few moments. Sahar tensed up with fear. Finally, Shapur once again looked up intently into her eyes. Today, we were very lucky, Shapur confessed, taking a deep breath. Dear daughter, these days are getting too much dangerous for you to go out with just Farshad. I must insist from now on that you have got to stay home. And if you must leave, security will escort you from now on. Fear and anxiety filled Sahar's heart. Suddenly, life in Iran had become too dangerous and fearful. Sahar felt like a prisoner of her own home, barred from the outside world. But, father, I will be more careful next time. I don't want to live this way and be afraid. Shapur nodded his head in agreement and sadly glanced toward the window. Sahar knew there was something terribly wrong with her father. Shapur once more glanced back at Sahar. Dear daughter, I don't want to frighten you. Terrible tragedy happened tonight while you were asleep. Sahar's heart began to race with fear. What happened, Peder? There was a terrible fire at the Cinema Rex Theater. Sahar and many innocent people inside the theater were killed. Sahar's eyes widened. She had enjoyed watching many films at the Cinema Rex with her father many years ago. She remembered seeing her favorite movie, The Wizard of Oz, with Shabnam and her father 3 years ago. Shapur shook his head in sadness. Over 400 people died in a terrible fire, Sahar. Shapur moved closer to Sahar, gently touching the top of her hand. Because of this terrible tragedy, it will be more dangerous to go out, dear daughter. Already, many protesters and anti-government people are blaming the Shah for this fire. But, father, the Shah would never do this terrible thing. He is a good man. Shapur agreed, shaking his head, trying to comfort Sahar. Yes, daughter, the Shah is a good man. Shapur once again held Sahar tightly in his arms. Don't be afraid. I will protect you. Some terrible Islamic extremist did this, daughter, in order to blame the Shah and force him to resign. Sahar held tightly onto her father. Fear gripped her heart. For the first time in her life, she felt like a prisoner in her own country. All she had was her father to hold on to at this moment. She knew she was daddy's little girl, and that in his arms, she was safe from all fear and danger. The event I mentioned there was the burning of the Cinema Rex Theater. This was the catalyst. It happened in August of 1978. This was the real catalyst that brought the greatest number of Iranians out to the street, because it was the goal of the forces loyal to Khomeini, who was still in Paris in exile, but he was sending messages to Iran. It was those forces that were loyal to Khomeini that came up with the idea, let's burn this theater, kill lots of people, and blame it on the Shah. This will be the death knell for him. And they were right. The burning of Cinema Rex in August of 1978. Just absolutely unjust and horrible what happened. Now, later on in the book, there is a scene where her father has been murdered by the new regime. She witnessed him one day being arrested as they were hiding in the house. And it's later on in this book, there is a scene where Sahar goes into Tehran. And it's at this time in Tehran where there are many women rising up to protest the new laws against women since the beginning of the Islamic regime. This is March 1979. And there's a scene in there where Sahar witnesses these women walking around the street, thousands of them, without wearing a hijab. Because of the hijab law, they're protesting. And it's a dangerous time, because it's right at that time that Sahar is arrested and put in Evin prison. One of the biggest changes to the new Islamic regime after the Iranian Revolution took root was the rights of women were diminished. And I want to take you now to a special interview from a human rights activist. Her name is Manda Zan Urban. She's featured in the film Iranium, and it's about the nuclear program. And she is thinking back to when she lived in Iran and what happened right after the Islamic Revolution. Let's listen to this interview.
One of the wars that Khomeini had with the Shah was about the equal rights for women. By 1972, we were more equal than American women or European women were. But 1979 came and Khomeini came along and took everything away, and we went back to 1907. I was the first woman to become the managing director at the Customs Administration in Iran, trying to change things, computerize and modernize the Customs Administration. One of the first things that Khomeini's regime did, they purified the government of women. And so I was put aside. And my father kept telling me, you better leave the country because they're going to come after you. They're not going to like the women who have been in charge, who can think for themselves. And at that time, my high school teacher, who had become the Secretary of Education, had already been executed by them. So I left the country with my daughter. And my father said, take the first flight out, no matter where it goes to, just out of this country. So I went. 2 days later, when I called home, my mother told me that they had come home for my arrest. My neck was saved within 2 days. and so many other women like me. Let's do the list of what the Khomeini did. First, he removed all the women's rights and pushed Iran back into Sharia laws for family. 50% of the population of Iran became nothing. The Iranian women have no rights now. Iranian women have no right choice of their clothing. They don't have custody of their children. They do not have. They can't divorce their husbands. They can't, their husbands can marry whatever and whoever they want to. They cannot choose where they live. They cannot choose to travel. They cannot choose to go to school or even step out of the house. These are the laws of the country against women. The media says, well, okay, they push their hijabs and, you know, the women of Iran do this, that, do that. That's not a big deal. The deal is, if a man wants to keep a woman in a pantry and close the door, they can. It's the law of the country. It's the law that the woman cannot do anything without her husband's permission. It's the law that the custody is given to the father. These are the laws of the country that is important. The scarf a little further up or down, that's not what I'm talking about when I talk about, when we women of Iran talk about the human rights of women. The human rights, the actual rights that gives humanity to the human, that the will, the personal will or freedom of choice for a human being are taken away from them by the law of the land. Not by the wish of a man, by the law of the land. And when you go to the court, there is not a lawyer to defend you. There is a clergy sitting there applying the Sharia law on the women, even if they accept to let you go to the court. So this is the most important issue, that the human rights of 50% of the population. The only thing that should be, it's humane and it's to the benefit of the world and the people of Iran, is to get rid of this regime. Get rid of the regime, the Islamic regime in Iran, and make the people of Iran forever indebted to whoever gets rid of this regime or whoever that supports them in their quest to get rid of this regime and have a democratic, legal, free society and government, who doesn't want to get into war with anybody, who doesn't need nuclear bomb, doesn't need any missiles of any kind. They just want to live in peace and harmony with the rest of the world. All we need to do is change this regime, and changing this regime, we can support the people of Iran to do it.
Manda Zand Irvin, herself a survivor of the Iranian Revolution, outlining precisely the dilemma of women to the present day living in Iran. There's a scene in my book, Chasing After Rainbow, where Sahar has escaped. Her father has been in prison. She runs into Tehran to see what is going on. It is March of 1979, and there is a group of women, a large group of women, that are marching through the streets protesting the new hijab law. And I want you to go with me to the book and hear this part of the story. Sahar was extremely exhausted and both hungry and thirsty as she arrived at the city limits of Tehran. The rays of the bright sun beamed across her face. She wiped the sweat off of her forehead and sat down on the sidewalk near a tall office building. Immediately, the loud sound of a chorus of voices caught her attention. Despite being tired, Sahar pulled her exhausted body up from the sidewalk and rounded the corner to Pahlavi Boulevard. Coming up the street from Tehran University was a sea of people marching together, carrying signs in their hands and shouting at the top of their lungs, "We will fight against the compulsory veil. Down with dictatorship." Hundreds of cars had to pull over to the side of the street to allow the protesters to march by. Sahar was astonished at what she was witnessing. The streets of Tehran were filled with angry women protesting against the new hijab law. All of the protesting women were hijabless. They were determined to let their voices be heard in opposition to Khomeini's new law that forced women to wear dark clothing and hijabs publicly, including their workplaces. At the same time that these outraged women, courageous women, marched down the street, several military vehicles emerged from the side street with Revolutionary Guards soldiers following close on foot. Sahar watched in fear as some of the soldiers discharged their weapons in the air to warn the protesters of the consequences of what they were doing. As Sahar watched in astonishment, a group of young women pushed their way through a crowd carrying signs screaming, "Freedom is neither an Eastern or Western concept. It is universal." The women were mocking Ayatollah Khomeini's slogan that Iran is neither an Eastern or Western concept. It is Islamic. The chanting and screaming was growing louder. Some of the soldiers pushed their way into the sea of women and began physically assaulting them. Sahar was shocked. "No, no," she shouted. "Stop, you can't do this." Suddenly, from deep down inside her soul, fierce determinations began to rise up within her, a spirit of courage being unleashed. Sahar was exhausted, distraught, angry. First they kidnapped her father, and now they were attacking her people. She couldn't stand by any longer and watch her people being brutalized by these fundamentalist Muslims who had taken over the government, forcing the Shah into exile. Iran was her home. Her country was being overtaken by mullahs, and Sahar refused to be silent any longer. She burst through a crowd of women and picked up a sign that had fallen on the ground. The frightening sound of screaming women in the distance being attacked by soldiers infuriated her, giving her even more courage. Today, March 7, 1979, was International Women's Day. Sahar was determined to make a stand. "We are women. We will wear what we choose, Khomeini," Sahar shouted loudly over the deafening noise of women screaming and chanting and the sound of gunshots in the air. "We will fight against the veil," Sahar screamed. Suddenly, she felt a shove against her back and fell up against a group of women in front of her. As she turned around, she saw in a flash the face of a soldier carrying a metal baton. "Die, you bitch," he yelled at Sahar. The soldier struck Sahar violently in the face with his weapon. Sahar's knees began to buckle, and blackness flashed before her eyes. She collapsed on the pavement in the midst of a crowd of screaming men. Thus then ends the reading from my book, Chasing After Rainbows, Stories of the Revolution. One of the things I've learned about my Iranian friends is their likes, of course, their dislikes. And one of the heroes of my Iranian friends is Charlie Chaplin. And I wondered, what was it about Charlie Chaplin that was so attractive to them? And then I came across a very unique speech that Charlie Chaplin made in his movie. It was 1940. The movie was The Great Dick. Charlie added this 4.5-minute final speech. It was at this time in 1940 that Hitler had just invaded France. And the speech you're about to hear showcases his considerable dramatic gifts. And it makes a plea in this speech for human decency. The speech was recorded in the Chaplin studio on June 24, 1940, precisely 1 week after the fall of France, when only Britain stood between Hitler and a total victory in the West. Chaplin felt the need to speak out against fascism. And you're going to hear this speech as he talks about the dictator And you can understand when you hear this speech why Charlie Chaplin is the hero to the Iranian people, because he's a voice of reason to summon humanity out of the darkness to stand against dictatorships. I want you to hear this short speech. It is powerful.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. Those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines, you are not cattle, you are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate, only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future, and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power, but they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Powerful, just powerful, so inspiring. This is Charlie Chaplin from the movie The Great Dictator, and the year is 1940. France has just fallen to the Nazi Blitzkrieg machine. And you can understand from those powerful words why my Iranian friends have adopted Charlie Chaplin as one of their most powerful voices. Many things he said there I would agree with. Some things I don't. science and progress is not our savior, it's Jesus. And I want to share with you one more soundbite on the program this morning, that as we look at dictators around the world and we fight with all of our might, rising up to unite against them, and we do our best to survive in a world filled with greed and evil and hatred, the cry of every Christian, come, Jesus, come. I want you to hear this song from a band called Servant, and it's the cry of every one of our hearts. Beautiful vocals from Sandy Brock, beautiful worship music from a band called Servant, Come Jesus Come. This morning on The Cross in the Desert, I have been featuring selections from my book, Chasing After Rainbows, Stories of the Revolution. If you want to know the complete story, and I want to just tell you, this is a political thriller. If you want the whole story of what happens to Shabnam, who's on death row in Tehran for distributing Bibles, of what happens, will Sahar and Shabnam get back together? You've got to read this book, Chasing After Rainbows, Stories of the Revolution. It's available up on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. And I hope you will read it, and I hope that it will be a book that will give you a desire, a passion to speak up for the people of Iran. There is a promise, a beautiful promise, in Psalm 72 that I use so often in my prayer time for my Iranian friends. And it's a promise for my Iranian friends, a promise from God. I want you to hear this beautiful four verses from Psalm 72. He will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. He feels pity for the weak and the needy, and he will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression and violence, for their lives are precious to him. Of course, the He is God. God hears the voice of the oppressed. He heard the voices of his children in Egypt, the Hebrews who were crying out against the oppressive lifestyle that they were under from the Pharaoh. He led them out. He rescued them. He made them cross the Red Sea onto dry land. You know the story of Exodus. God always hears the oppressed. He always helps the oppressed. And basically, the oppressed are those that have no one to defend them. He has feelings, it says. He feels pity for the weak and the needy. And again, he will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression, that is, buy them out of the slavery of oppression, and he will redeem them from oppression and violence. Why? Because their lives are precious to him. This is a very trustworthy promise. And when you look at what's happening in Iran, and on a daily basis you hear the news of the execution of prominent athletes and political prisoners, you say, where in has God rescued them? Well, I can tell you the many prayers that have been answered when I have prayed for my Iranian friends. And one of the most outstanding prayers that was answered was my friend Maral. I would meet with her regularly on Skype. She was a divorced single mother, and her ex-husband was stalking her now, following her every move, and she was just so tired of the lifestyle of living in Iran. And she had a Facebook account, and we talked a lot. And it was one day when she was on her way back home from university that as she turned the corner, she saw the police were at her home, and she knew instantly what this was all about. She had appeared many times on her Facebook account without a hijab. And she was also part of a small group that secretly met at university talking against the government. They would meet and discuss things. And so Sahar was frightened. She immediately got on the cell phone to her brother, and they concocted a plan where they would take her and her son Parham secretly out of Iran and hook them up in Turkey with a refugee group. And that refugee group would have to cross over the Zagros Mountains, very dangerous. They would have to go by bus and by car on the way to Germany. At one scene, they were in a little rubber life raft in the Aegean Sea, making their way to Samos Island in Greece. It was a long, exhausting, difficult journey. But I prayed every step of the way for my friend Maral. And I'll never forget the day when she got to Germany in 2015, the end of the year, and she called me on WhatsApp. It was the most exciting day of my life to know that the Lord had promised he would deliver her from oppression and violence and bring her safely into Germany. She's very successful today. And she is a dental assistant, and her life is not easy. She's still working to learn the language and assimilate herself, but she is safe, and she has a new life. And that's just one example of many examples of how God has used my prayers in very incredible ways. This has been a journey for me. This is a new year, and this I guess I started this really about 10 years ago. This has been just a most exciting, a most rewarding journey. And that's why this morning I read to you from my book about the Iranian Revolution as we near towards the 42nd year, the 42nd anniversary of the takeover of the Iranian people. It's these books that in many ways are their voices. I have many good friends right now that live in Turkey, in between Iran and freedom. It's not easy for refugees in Turkey. You have to be very careful. You really can't get a job. It's against the government. And you have to watch out if you're a Christian. You are harassed all the time by Muslim men. And you got to be careful that you're not deported back to Iran. You have to toe the mark. And work is so difficult to find. It's so hard. The UNHCR takes such a long time to interview these Iranians. So this is a lifetime commitment to see their freedom. And I know when God says he will rescue them from oppression, I can tell you, I know for sure that eventually he does. This has been the most rewarding experience of my life. And I want to say thank you to all of you who listen weekly to what is happening in Iran. And you are witnessing really the miracles of God as my friends that I've asked you to pray for are one day able to walk away to freedom. And that was the case with my dear friend Sholi Pakravan and her daughter Shahzad. Sholi was the mother of Rahane Jabari that was executed more than 5 years ago. And she was able to leave Iran about 4 years ago, and she is safely in Germany. Again, another example of dramatic answers to prayer. So I'm sharing this with you because I know I say often to you, there are petitions on my page for you to sign. There are stories of my Iranian friends. Please pray for them. And you are so good to do that. And together we are witnessing our great God move on the hearts, the hardened hearts of leaders in Iran, and see my friends escape to freedom. And so I want to thank you this morning from my heart for taking the time to listen and enjoying, hopefully, the journey you've been on. I love to write books about them. Most every one of my books is about their plight for freedom. And this is just one example I wrote to you this morning, a story that is so precious to me. So thank you so much for spending time with me. And as we take this journey into the new year and Biden becomes president, it means that a return to the nuclear deal is not a good situation for my Iranian friends, because once again, this government will appease the mullahs with deals and money that can only further entrench that regime into Iran. They need hope. They need freedom. God bless you. Thank you for listening today. I will see you again on Thursday on the Cross in the Desert. Have a great week.